Have you give us, first of all, some background on yourself,
mm-hmm.
and where you're born, where you came from, and maybe your first experience with Marjorie Barstow or one of the other great teachers of the Alexander Technique. And kind of tell us a little bit about that first brush with that.
Sure. Well, I was born in Washington, D.C., and lived there until I went away to college. Later, I went to work in Toronto, Canada, and I was working as an economist there for the Ontario government. I had no particular interest in anything to do with physical training or sports or anything of that sort. But I read an article about the Alexander Technique and a local teacher, and something about it I just knew that I had to check this out. So I started taking lessons. It was it seemed to me a somewhat mysterious process. The teacher would have me sit in a stool and stand up and sit down a few times with his hands guiding me in different ways, and there was some table work. I never felt anything much happening during the lesson, but within a month I grew an inch in height, and all my clothes had to be, I was working in a pretty straight job then, and I had to go out and buy new suits and stuff, and I was pretty impressed with this, and all sorts of other effects occurred as well.
So for the kids out there in the audience that want to be basketball players, huh?
Well, I think that was a fairly dramatic example. I'd been the same height for 30-odd years, and suddenly I was an inch taller. But all sorts of other effects were going on, too. I mean, my was widening across, my chest was expanding, and just generally my health and energy level was picking up pretty dramatically. And I became very intrigued with this process. I read everything I could about it. This was back in the mid-70s. There weren't too many books out on the topic. But eventually, after about a year and a half, I decided that I wanted to do this as a profession. So I went over to England and enrolled in a 3-year full-time training course to become an Alexander teacher. And it was about midway through that course that I came to Lincoln to attend one of Marge's winter workshops, which was an amazing experience. Here was this little old lady. She was at that time close to 80 years old. And she was teaching a group of 25 or 30 people in the basement of Westbrook Hall for 14 days straight, 6 hours a day, right through New Year's into January. It was an amazing experience. I saw all kinds of incredible changes occurring in other people and in myself. She had an ability to engage our thinking about how we were using ourselves to make changes, little subtle changes in how we were thinking and moving that had profound effects on our overall well-being. And from that point on, she became my primary teacher. I finished my training in England, but really since then, she was the person who had the most influence on my teaching.
So you, in a sense, you've lived in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and you spent, as you say, close to 3 years in England,
mm-hmm.
and now, Robert, you make your home
here. Been
here
for the last almost 6 years now.
In Lincoln.
In Lincoln, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the first time that I met Marjorie, and I think it was back in about 1986, 87. She was living in the house off of Washington.
Mm-hmm. 20th and Washington.
20th and Washington. Mm-hmm. And I had inadvertently sold a product that didn't have everything inside it to somebody, and I needed to make one of those famous after-hours retail deliveries to try to make the sale right and to please mm-hmm. the customer. And so I was told that this person was going to be at that address, and I walked in, and here were about 15 people looking like they were standing fairly erect. One person looking perhaps at a wall, one person behind them with a hand on one of the shoulders or at the back of the head. And this very bright-eyed, wonderfully gracious woman walked up and said, "Young man, you may want to stay because this could be one of the most important days of your life."
Sounds like Marge.
And yeah. Unfortunately, I had miles to go before I slept, but that was my first experience with Marjorie Barstow then.
Mm-hmm.
How long had she been working with this?
She was the first, the originator of this method was a man named F. Matthias Alexander, who was an Australian by birth, but who spent most of his professional career in London, England. He began to train teachers towards the end of his teaching career, and which was in the early 30s. And Marge was actually the first person to enroll on his first training course. So she was, until she died recently, the world's oldest Alexander teacher, and in many people's view, the world's finest Alexander teacher.
Here in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Right here in Lincoln, for almost, from about the mid-30s to about a year ago, Marge was teaching here in Lincoln. At first, she put a lot of her energy into running her family business, so teaching was not her major occupation, but she was always focused on the work. And in the last 20, 25 years or so, she's become very well known internationally and nationally, and people would come here to do her workshops from all over the country, all over the world. People would travel here from Australia to spend 5 days with her, for example, and it was not uncommon. She also traveled a lot herself, and there was a period of time when she was actually outside of Lincoln more than she was here, just traveling. And this was when she was in her 80s. So it's pretty amazing. She herself is a pretty amazing testament to the power of the work.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Robert Rickover today on this edition of Exploring Unexplained Phenomena. It's 10:18. Great to have you with us in case you've just joined us. I'm Scott Colborn, and this is KZUM at 89.3 FM. As well as if you're listening on cable, cable channel 10, we're there also, and it's great to have you with us. We're talking with Robert Rickover today about the Alexander method and the Alexander technique. We've approached the Alexander method and technique a couple of times. Let's give it a little bit fuller description now, Robert, mm-hmm. in terms of what is this mysterious stuff?
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, one of the reasons it's mysterious is that it is actually very simple and down to earth, and it's almost too down to earth. It's basically a way of teaching people how to get rid of harmful stress from their body. Now, having said that, you know, the question is how does that take place? The teaching method involves the teacher using his or her hands as well as his or her voice to guide the student to show someone how they can do whatever activities they do in their life, whether it's sitting at a desk or running or carpentry or playing a violin, whatever, how they can do those activities in a way that puts less stress on their bodies, less harmful stress on their bodies, how they can do it in a way that uses their physical bodies, their physical mechanisms, in the way that those mechanisms are designed to operate. The sad fact is that most of us have acquired habits of tension and misuse and so on over the years that we are largely unaware of, and but which have a huge effect on our ability to perform efficiently and our ability to be pain-free. So
some of the examples of stress may be that perhaps from working we tend to hunch our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps we lean a certain way when we're at a desk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's putting, I'll use myself as an example. I've been called a person that has a big head. We have this cranium, this, mm-hmm. this structure atop of our neck,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it's fairly heavy. And
it's about 12 to 14 pounds, our head. Which is a big portion of our total weight. And there it is, way up at the end of our spine, balanced in a very, designed to be balanced in a very nice way. There's a whole mechanism where the head meets the top of the spine. It's designed to allow freedom of movement, allow exchange of information and fluids between your head and your torso. It's designed to function very efficiently, but if we interfere with that, if we tend to tense our necks or hunch our shoulders and tighten our necks that way, it can interfere with that whole mechanism, and that has repercussions throughout our whole body. Gene, I want to get back to this business of hunching. Mm-hmm. I've observed that to take place a lot with children in school, particularly when they're first starting to learn how to write. They're often put a huge amount of tension in their hands and fingers and arms and shoulders. And inadvertently, that kind of tightening up and tensing is often rewarded by teachers because it does show that the child is trying.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's an over-efforting that for many people carries over for the rest of their lives, so that every time they pick up a pen or a pencil, there's an enormous amount of tension in their arms and shoulders. I see this a lot in banks when you go to deposit money in a bank and the teller has to write a few things. Incredible amounts of tension in fingers and hands. Now, that's just a one small example, but if you kind of multiply that in many other areas, you can see how those kind of patterns can really interfere with your ability to function well and can create pain and discomfort.
So the Alexander method and technique is a way to function physically and mentally at an optimum level, then, to mm-hmm. use this physical vehicle that we've all been given mm-hmm. in one of the best ways.
And we're designed, we're set up, we're wired to function beautifully. And there are some people, even in Western society, who manage to do that without any special training or retraining. My favorite example is Fred Astaire, a Nebraskan, who, as far as I could see from looking at his movies and seeing clips of him even into old age, never lost that. But that's relatively rare in Western or industrialized societies. Now, you do find examples among so-called primitive people. But in the West, most of us, for whatever reasons, urban stress, childhood stress, imitating bad habits of other people when you're a young child, injuries, which, for example, in my own case, when I was about 20 years old, I very badly turned an ankle. Now, that ankle healed within a few days, but the pattern of walking that I developed around that, trying to protect that ankle, lasted for the next 15 years and ended up causing me shoulder pain and neck pain that seemed would at first, you know, might seem to be unrelated to the ankle. That's the kind of thing that the Alexander technique can help with a lot.
Now, I'm glad you brought up kids also in schools, because when we mention stress and those sorts of things, we think about adults as about the only people that have that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
kids are carefree and they play in the open field and they run and push each other and play with toys in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's us adults that have the stress and, you know.
Well, I don't think, I think it generally kids use their bodies more efficiently than adults. But even by the time a kid spent a couple of years in school, sitting at a desk for several hours a day, standardized desk sizes for different sized kids. Often, if you can kind of visualize sitting at a desk and looking up at a blackboard, tending to lean forward on the desk and pulling their heads back and down onto their spine, I'll illustrate this, then if that can easily become a habit, an unconscious habit. And then they take that tension with them into their other activities, and that will affect their balance and coordination.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is true that if you want to see examples of really good human use, look at 5 and 6 year old kids that have not spent too much time in school, but who have developed their basic coordinations and skills. They generally are pretty good, but when you start getting older kids, you start seeing misuse patterns quite strongly.
I can think, Robert, of a famous actor who plays the character Will Riker in Star Trek
mm-hmm.
Next Generation,
mm-hmm.
the assistant chief to Picard. And the way he carries himself, his head is sort of cocked to one side and mm-hmm. his shoulders are hunched. And it almost reminds me of the way John Wayne used to carry himself. But I've often thought to myself, I mean, has that been adopted for the role? Or is that a neck injury that he had at some point, or a posture problem, or...
I don't know. In the case of Riker, I don't see any reason why he would need that for the role, so that could well have been something that he had before. It is true that actors often do have to play parts that involve misuse of themselves. A very famous example is the fellow who played the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I can't remember his name.
Lon Chaney? The original?
I'm not sure. But whoever it was, I remember reading that afterwards they had pretty serious back problems himself. Part of being a good actor is being able to... Go into a role, but in a way that doesn't harm you. And that means doing it very consciously and being very aware of what you're doing, doing it with a minimum amount of extra tension, and then very clearly coming out of that after you finish the role. Which is, by the way, one reason why the Alexander technique has always been very popular with actors and, in fact, performers of all kinds, musicians, dancers, singers, because those people have to use themselves well if they're going to be successful. A good violinist has to have pretty good use of him or herself. If they don't, if they have extra tension in their arms or shoulders, two things will happen. The sound won't be as good, and they'll start to get backaches, and they may have to end their careers. So it's not an uncommon thing to happen. So that's one group of people who've always been very drawn to the Alexander technique.
This training originated in England. Marjorie Barstow, one of the first or the largest proponents of the Alexander technique. Are there other places in the world now that, besides yourself and Lincoln here, that are studying the Alexander technique and how it affects people?
The work has had a huge growth over the last 20 years. When I first started taking lessons back in the mid-70s, there was an international teachers list that was literally one page long. And most of those teachers were in London. There was only one teacher in all of Canada at the time. I happened to be in the same city that he was in. Now there are several thousand teachers, and the spread has been phenomenal, particularly in Europe, Australia, Israel, and in the U.S., I would say mainly in large cities on the coasts. There are not too many teachers in the Midwest, outside of places like Chicago and so on. Marge was kind of an outpost here in Nebraska. And it's interesting that Marge's approach to the work was very much, I think, came out of her own background as a native Nebraskan. She was born in Ord, 1899. And, you know, I've always had this sense here that if you need help from somebody in Nebraska, they will show you how to do it. This is sort of on the prairie or in a farm environment. They'll show you how to do it in order that you can then do it for yourself. That kind of very practical exchange of knowledge, show you how to do something, and now it's your turn to do it for yourself. That was very much Marge's approach. She put a lot of emphasis on people taking responsibility for themselves. And I think that meshed very well with Alexander, who grew up in rural Australia in the late 19th century in a very newly settled area where people had to be self-reliant. And he had a voice problem, and he had to figure out how to take care of it. And so he set about doing that. It was that kind of a do-it-yourself approach.
We're talking with Robert Rickover, our guest today on this edition of Exploring and Explaining Phenomena. It's 10:30. We'll be back in about 30 seconds with more conversation and taking your phone. Robert Rickover here. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 474-5086. Robert, describe maybe a lesson. If somebody came to you and said, Robert, I'm a 45-year-old male or female, and I'm on my feet the entire day at my mm-hmm. place of work.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a lesson that she may start with that person? We had a person that walked in during our break, too, and said...
Alexander technique of what?
Right. What is this?
What is it? Maybe I should try to answer that first and
okay.
then talk a little bit about what a lesson would be like. I guess the best definition would be the Alexander... It's a technique or a method of showing people how they can use themselves, and by themselves I mean their physical mechanism, their body, more efficiently, more effectively, with less strain, with less discomfort. And one of the things that we would do in a lesson would be to, first of all, look at the person. The teacher would observe, right from when the person was coming in, how they're doing what they're doing, how they're standing, how they sit down in a chair, how they speak, what they do with themselves when they're doing regular activities. And probably if someone came in and said, well, I'm on my feet a lot and I'm getting backaches from that, or I would work with them just standing up. I would ask them to notice, I would start to make them aware of what they were doing, particularly with their head, neck, torso relationship, what's going on up here. I would probably give them some gentle hands-on guidance to show them some other possibilities. For example, a lot of people stand tending to push their hips forward and their backs back a bit, so when they stand up, they're doing that standing up forcefully. They're using a lot of effort to stay up rather than simply being in balance, where very little actual physical work is required. But what is required is flexibility and an ability to adjust quickly to changing circumstances. So one can stand, there are many different ways to stand up. Some of them require a huge amount of extra effort. And often that effort is not, the person doing that effort isn't really aware of it because they've been doing it that way for 20, 30, 40 years or more. And sometimes when you help someone to, for example, stand up without that efforting, they may feel a couple of things. One of them, they may feel as though their orientation in space is wrong. For example, if they've been tending to push back from their heels or from their hips and you guide them into a more upright stance, they will feel as though they're pitched forward. Often at that point, it's real helpful to bring out a mirror or in a group class to get feedback from the members of the group. That's one of the big advantages of group work. The other thing that's very common is that they might feel as though somehow it's just not quite legitimate to be standing like this. They're not doing what you should be doing to stand.
This isn't the way I stood for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, so...
It doesn't feel as though I'm making enough effort to do it. And you get that a lot with sometimes with musicians and singers. You can get a singer to produce a wonderful free sound without the strain, and everyone in the group will be blown away by it, and they will think, I didn't do anything. This couldn't possibly be a sound that would reach out to the back of a hall. But in fact, it probably reaches out far better than their previous sound. So it does take a little while to sometimes just get used to these changes. But again, that's where I tend to work with groups as much as possible, and group work is very good for providing immediate down-to-earth feedback. And someone will say, that sounded great. And, you know, you have enough people in a group, you can get a lot of sources of feedback to somebody.
You've mentioned the group work. Do you have a group that's going to be forming here in the near future?
Well, I'm in the process right now of just completing work on a studio addition to the back of my house. And that should be ready by the end of January, hopefully. And as soon as that's built, I will start having evening and daytime groups, yeah.
And last summer I put up with that, scooping the path through the plaster and drywall dust every night to the bathroom and to the bed.
Well, this is what we've been doing for the last 3 months.
Yeah, I wish you well on that, and I hope it's going to
We're at the end. The drywall is up, and we're just working on painting and flooring right now, so it's pretty close to completion, yeah.
Robert, we'll give this out to you at the end of the program. What's a phone number where people could contact you if they had questions or they would like to sign up for either individual lessons or for group work?
Sure. It's 475-4433.
We've got about 15 minutes left in the program today, and let's take a few of your phone calls. 474-5086. Our guest today is Robert Rickover. We're talking about the Alexander Method and how this could be useful for a variety of situations, a variety of people. And we'll be here at 474-5086, another 15 or so minutes. I'm trying to think of, let's say a person came to you. What might they say? They're seeking relief from something. Why would they come to see an Alexander teacher?
Instead of something else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Alexander, and this addresses itself a little bit to one of the questions that a caller has apparently sent in. It tends to appeal very much to people who want to take charge of their own selves, who would rather learn how to do it for themselves than be dependent on having to go back to someone and have something done to them. So, not everybody has that orientation, and it's probably a good idea to ask yourself, is that really how I want to approach my own health and well-being? But the rewards of doing it yourself are huge, because you Alexander instruction is not something that's designed to be done over the rest of your life or forever. Usually people come for perhaps a few months worth of lessons, perhaps once or twice a week at the beginning, and then less often later on, or they may come to groups once or twice a week. But after a while, they learn how to look after themselves and make the changes in themselves that they want to make. They may come back occasionally for refresher courses, and Alexander teachers are usually people who have started off with some sort of a problem or some sort of an issue of their own that they wanted to work on, and then became very intrigued with the work and wanted to keep working on themselves and making that their profession. So Alexander teachers would tend to go to other teachers for lessons from time to time. But it's very much, as I say, it's very much something that appeals to people who are interested in learning about themselves and taking charge of their own health and well-being. Do-it-yourself therapy.
The person asking about, calling a question, Robert, rather, and asked about, is the Alexander Method and technique good for injuries and diseases?
Well, it's not a substitute for medical care. I should say that right off the top. But, you know, when we're talking about injuries, again, often what happens with an injury is that we tend to adjust our posture and our way of walking and sitting to that injury, and to favor a leg or to not use an arm in quite the same way. Now, when the injury heals, that pattern of adjustment may not just disappear, because it may have become habitual.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had examples of people who, after a few lessons, suddenly re-experienced in a very mild form, perhaps falling off a bike at age 12 and hurting one of their hips. And they suddenly realized that they had been holding their whole torso, their whole body, in a way that was a reaction to that injury. The actual injury was had long ago healed. It might have been some bruising, muscle bruising or whatever, but it had long ago healed, but the pattern of holding around that persisted. So in that sense, yes, it can help very much with injuries.
We've got a caller, Robert, that would like to go on the air here and ask a question for you.
Headphones on?
Yeah. This is 474-586, Robert Rickover, and we're on line one here, Jan. Okay. And you're on the air.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, great to have you with us.
I'm a carpenter by trade and a guitar player and other musician on the side. And last night in playing music, and this is a problem that's come up many times before, if I do repetitive work with my hands during the day and go to play my guitar at night, many times my left hand in particular cramps up, and I've often been real fearful of the dreaded carpal tunnel that a lot of my peers have ended up with radical surgeries and things like this. And is this way a possibility to avoid that kind of radical ways to solve these problems?
Well, it certainly can be. It's if I were in the situation you're in, I would certainly investigate something like the Alexander technique. Yes, because it may be that you're unknowingly misusing your arms and hands and fingers and perhaps other parts of you when you're working, and that the cumulative effect of that misuse can produce pain, discomfort, perhaps even limit your ability to move your arm freely. So, yes, I would certainly, that's very much the kind of reason people do come for Alexander lessons.
Okay, great. Well, you'll be getting a call from me, I think. Scott will repeat that number, I hope.
Sure, we could repeat it right now.
Well, let's do.
475-4433.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling.
That was 475-4433 for Robert Rickover and a teacher of the Alexander Method. We've talked about musicians that may come to you.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about dancers, mm-hmm. actors.
Mm-hmm.
and my friend Ken, who called in, also brought up a point, too, that maybe simple lay people mm-hmm. that maybe have developed a chronic problem
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There may be at the root of that something in the way that they've adapted
mm-hmm.
To some motor function
mm-hmm.
that's part of the cause for this.
Absolutely, yeah. They're really the two groups of people who are the most, I suppose, most Alexander students fall into two categories. They're either performers that we've spoken about who want to improve their performance skills, and the other group is people who are in pain or who are often it's a combination, the violinist with very stiff arms or stiff shoulder or sore neck. There are some people, a relatively small number of people, who are drawn to this work more as a path of self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have any immediate problem, pain or discomfort, but they're interested in learning about themselves in a way that will be useful, make them better able to function in life. It is true that most of us really don't know a lot about how we're set up anatomically. I managed to get through 12 years of school and 4 years of college without learning a single thing about my anatomy. Zero. I had no idea. I had heard of ribs and spines and so on, but I had no idea where they were in myself. And even people who have studied some anatomy often have no idea, for example, of how their head rests on top of their spine, where that connection is. Or, for example, how their arms contact their torsos, where the connections are. Most people, for example, think that the point of connection is where the so-called shoulder joint, but actually it's right here. It's at the sternum, and if you don't know those very simple basic things in yourself, and if you have a misconception about what your structure is, then you're going to move and act and stand and sit in ways that try to approximate your faulty mapping of your own body. So one of the things that's very useful for people to do is learn what I call kindergarten anatomy, anatomy that a kindergarten kid would have no trouble understanding, which ought to be taught in kindergarten, is not taught because most kindergarten teachers, most people have no idea of it themselves. Just some very basic things, how their head connects with their spine, where their hip joints are, how their wrists and elbows function, where their arms are attached to their body. Very simple things like that. You don't need to learn a lot of Latin names of muscles and bones. You just need to learn a few things and know where those connections are on you. And it's very easy to do. It's something that a person can do in a few days. And it can make a huge difference.
We're talking with Robert Rickover today, our guest on this edition of Exploring Unexplained Phenomena. And we've got about 10 minutes left here. We're at 474-5086. Are you experiencing some chronic pain in your life that maybe as a result from an injury, from an adaptation to something that happened earlier in your life? Why don't you give us a call at 474-5086? Or perhaps you've been an Alexander student yourself and you've taken some lessons and like to share some comments with people. Again, our phone number here is 474-5086. And we've got about 10 minutes left here for the broadcast today. Next week, my program guest is going to be Sandra Ray. 2 weeks from today is Nancy Goff, talking about her mystical adventures to Peru. If people in the audience were to come to a group Alexander method instruction, what would they experience? They'd walk in the door, and there'd be a number of people there taking coats off and getting kind of comfortable, and what would happen?
It would typically be a group of maybe 5 to 10 people, and I would have people introduce themselves so that it was you weren't amongst total strangers. And what goes on in a group is the teacher would probably be working with one person at a time in the group, but would be bringing the group into that process. The other members of the group can function, first of all, they can learn by observing what's going on with the person who's having the lesson, but also they can act as mirrors, as sources of feedback to the person who's getting the work. So the way I work with groups is I try to involve everybody in the process right from the very beginning. One of the things that's very important in that kind of a process is to learn how to make non-judgmental observations about people. Learn how to look and observe people's patterns of posture and movement in a way that is not passing judgment on it and saying that this is bad and this is good, but rather, this is what I see. I see, for example, that when you go to pick up the violin and start to play, you hunch your shoulders a lot more. You hunch your shoulders in a way that doesn't seem necessary for playing that instrument. Or I see that when you start to pick up a pencil and write, you tense your whole shoulder and you twist your body out of shape and you restrict your breathing. Those kinds of very straightforward observations that aren't saying this is bad, this is, and also aren't trying to interpret it, but are just, this is what I see. And now if the teacher helps you, for example, in picking up the violin and starting to play, okay, now I see that you're not hunching your shoulders so much. And now I hear a different quality of sound, perhaps, coming from the violin. Those sorts of observations are extremely valuable to a student, and it's one of the reasons why, in my opinion, group work is the most powerful way for many people, not everybody, but for many people to learn this work, because you're being asked right from the beginning to observe both yourself and other people in a very objective way. You're gathering information from yourself and from those around you in order to use that information in a way to make useful changes in your behavior.
You know, I could see, Robert, some of your work being very well received in, like, the public school system, especially in a grade school setting where kids are good models, and kids mm-hmm. want to follow the instruction.
Kids are wonderful imitators.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there have been a number of pilot projects of Alexander teachers working in the school system, usually at very early grades, kindergarten, first, second, third grade. There have been a number in England and also in New York State. There have been some, and there may have been others I'm not aware of. And they've been very successful because kids, as you say, are very quick learners. They don't have a lot of preconceptions that they have to get over. And, I mean, if they see something works and it's easier to sit in a different way, they'll go for it. There's no, they don't have a lot of, plus whatever habits they have, harmful habits they have picked up, they have been with them for a pretty short period of time, and so they're quite easy to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Robert, what's your phone number again for people that may have interest in contacting you for schedules, for group lessons, for private instruction?
Sure, 475-4433.
Okay, we've got about, Robert, roughly 3 to 4 minutes left here. Is there anything that you'd like to say then that we haven't addressed today to the audience, to maybe kind of pull things into a final focus for our audience?
Well, I think that one of the things about the Alexander technique that I'll just come back to again for a moment is that it really is a method of taking charge of your own well-being. And, I mean, depending a little bit on your philosophy of health care and so on, I think a lot of people have beginning to realize that ultimately they're in charge of themselves. Now, you can go to doctors and you can go to different specialists for help, but that really you have to take charge yourself of what's going on with you. And I think the Alexander technique is very, very much in tune with that way of looking at things. So, I think anyone who is interested in these kind of ideas, interested in learning about themselves, how they function, how to improve that functioning in a very practical, down-to-earth way. It's kind of ironic that we're on discovering exploring the unexplained, because really the Alexander technique in its essence is very, very down-to-earth and practical. Marjorie Barstow used to always refer to it as applied common sense. It's taking a look at yourself and saying, what am I doing, and is there a way that I can do it better? And to me, it's a very simple but a very intriguing and powerful way to go about making changes.
And how about a final word, too, about Marjorie Barstow? What kind of a legacy did she leave?
She left an amazing legacy. She taught, as I said, here in Lincoln for over 60 years. She trained a large number of teachers. She had an influence on many other teachers and an influence on the work that has traveled around the world. I mean, there are many, many people who are teachers and students of the technique now because of her. So her legacy is, and she brought to the technique a clarity of expression, a simplification in the best sense of the word, and an extraordinary dedication to staying with the basic principles and staying with the process and seeing how far it could take her. And she constantly revised her way of teaching. Her teaching in her last few years was totally different from what it had been earlier. She was a woman who was constantly looking for better ways to do things. Better ways to do things. She was never satisfied she never reached a plateau and said, okay, I'm here, and this is as far as I want to go. She was constantly reaching higher in herself, in her students, in all aspects of her life. So she was an inspiration to hundreds of, probably thousands of people, and certainly hundreds of Alexander teachers.
Did she have any kids or any?
No, she never married. She did not have any close family at the time she died. She had a sister who died a few years earlier than her, towards the end, the last, say, 15, 20 years of her life, I would say the Alexander technique was like her primary focus. Mm-hmm. She basically dedicated herself to this process and took it in directions that no one had thought it was possible to go. She was the one who really brought the whole concept of group work into the Alexander teaching profession. Up until that point, it had not really been considered possible to do that. And she showed us how you can do it.
Robert, how about a number again, a final time here, for people that may want to contact you for lessons or instruction?
Sure. Or if they just want to know where they can read more about the technique or find teachers in other cities, I'd be happy to talk to anyone about that. 475-4433.
And when you've got your studio completed there, would you get back with me, too, and give me a schedule?
Sure.
And I'll be sure and announce that to our people that heard the broadcast today. And
sure.
We're going to kind of follow up on that then.
Okay.
Okay, Robert. I want to thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Taking time out of your morning to come.
It was a pleasure to come. It was a pleasure to be here. Great view you've got from here.
Yeah, looking out north. By the way, there's no football game today, folks, so... There's no need to rush around. There's no football game today. Thanks very much for listening today. Thanks to Jan for her production assistance. And thanks to you folks out there for making the program possible. Broadcast of the last hour of Exploring Unexplained Phenomena was made possible in part by the Zoo Bar at 14th and P, Lincoln's internationally known blues bar, bringing Lincoln blues, reggae, R&B, and roots rock since 1973, and additional support by Dr. Fred Mazoff. Dr. Fred Mazoff provides comprehensive medical and surgical eye care and eyelid plastic surgery. Dr. Mazoff is newly relocated at 4645 Normal Boulevard, Suite 245. The phone number is 486-4269. Stay tuned in about 90 seconds for New Dimensions. This is listener-supported KZ.
Twists and turns that the filmmakers have built into the plot are almost as diverting as the background.